Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXC ACRA. That's 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Sean Doolin. Sean is married to Christine and has one son and resides in Windham, New York. He was born in the Bronx, where he lived for part of his youth before moving to Rockland County, New York. He has been a practicing trial lawyer since 1994. He started his career as a prosecutor in the Bronx, but is currently an advocate for the elderly that reside in long-term facilities such as nursing homes and assisted living. Sean is of Italian, Scottish, and Irish heritage, his father having immigrated to the United States from Scotland. Sean's hobbies include magic, mountain biking, hiking, skiing, and independent films. He was once a voracious reader, but that has been replaced by magic. Indeed, 2 years ago, he became a practitioner of the magical arts, focusing chiefly on the skill of sleight of hand. Sean has traveled to Scotland, England, Italy, Germany several times, Vegas 4 times, Ohio, New Jersey, and other locations in order to learn from the best magicians. He particularly enjoys street performing and up-close magic. One final piece of interesting information, Sean and his wife were married by Mayor Giuliani in Grand Central Station with a televised wedding. The reason being, they won a contest organized by IKEA that was looking for Mr. and Mrs. New York City. For their troubles, they won a lifetime supply of furniture, a honeymoon in Sweden, and IKEA paid for the wedding and band. In order to accommodate all of this, they had to get married within a period of 13 days. This was the notice that IKEA gave them. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's an interesting bio, mate. You're a lawyer, you're a magician, and you're a recipient of being married in Grand Central Station. Fantastic.
I'm curious about the lifetime of furniture. Do they just like keep sending you stuff, or was it just a huge, like, massive truck of furniture?
Well, the lawyer in me required a contract. Originally, they just defined it as a lifetime supply of furniture, but I figured that that might at some point be a problem. So we have a contract. The three different phases of our lives, we were going to get our furniture. One was when we got married. Mm-hmm. The other was when we had our first child. Yeah. And then finally when I retire, which I, at that time, was hoping would be age 50, which is coming up this year.
And are you on track?
A few more years, I'll probably continue working.
Right.
But so we get another round of furniture actually this year, which is nice.
Excellent, yeah.
So what do you get to pick the furniture, or do they say, hey, we're giving you a couch, a bed, and a, you know, that's it?
It was $15,000 for each phase. Well, for two of the phases. One was, I think, $7,500. And then we had them adjusted for the consumer price index. So this round, since it's 20 years later, this round is going to be $23,000, I think.
Nice.
And the best part is they have to deliver and assemble the furniture. We put that in the contract.
Wow.
using their own little language-free diagrams, they put the stuff together.
That's right. And what they didn't know, and we didn't know at the time, was that we were going to live in the Catskill Mountains. We were living in the Bronx at the time, which was no big deal, but now they have to come up here. And
well, I bet sure. The guy's delivering a lot. It's a night out, you know. It's a day out, you know.
Yeah.
But that must be fascinating, getting married in Grand Central Station.
It was a whirlwind affair. It was 13 days notice. That's all we had. It was a contest.
So how did you find out about the contest, and how did you enter it?
My wife saw it in the Daily News.
Right.
And, well, at that point in our lives, there was a little pressure for us, for me to make a commitment and get married, mm-hmm. as many men know.
Yeah.
And she saw that, and I had to show some good faith. So I said, sure, why don't we enter the contest? The contest was, if you wrote you had to write an essay on why you were the ideal New York City couple.
Right.
And anybody was allowed to enter as long as they were willing to get married on 13 days' notice. So we wrote an essay, and we won.
Wow.
And how long was the essay?
It was a page. I think they gave us a limit, so it might have been a page.
250 words or something.
Right. I don't remember. I think it was like one page. But we had a lot of ties to New York City. Both our parents were immigrants. We both served the city of New York. We both were born in the city of New York. So that kind of, I think, allowed us to stand out a little bit.
Yeah, and did they know? I know we've talked off mic about some of your ancestors? Did they know about them at the time?
They did not.
I'm referring specifically to who am I referring to?
Well, my great-grandfather was a mafia don in New York City, and my uncle was Joe Valachi.
Wow.
And my great-grandfather was Gaetano Reina, R-E-I-N-A.
Right.
And not only did they not know, but when I got hired by the Bronx District Attorney's Office, it didn't come up in their investigation. I was very pleased because... maybe I wouldn't have gotten the job.
But that's interesting stuff because that's part of New York City folklore, isn't it? Not only is it your family, but it's part of the romance of the New York City, and way back around about the time of the Prohibition and all of that, and unfortunately, the killings and the underhand stuff, but. It's been the subject of hundreds of books and movies and things like that. And it's a big industry, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It's very much a part of our culture. And it's even part of the culture of the Catskill Mountains with Legs Diamond and his history up in the Catskill region. And there was a book written about Joe Valachi, and my great-grandfather is in many books.
If you look
at his name, you'll find it in many mafia history books and a few movies as well. So it's very much a part of our culture. It is romanticized. We know it's a brutal world that they lived in.
When we finish here and we leave, if you give me a kiss in the cheek as we leave, should I be worried?
We have to do the full ceremony. We have to become blood brothers. And, we can talk about it. You know what
all
I
right.
mean?
Yeah.
Too bad there's no time for all that. Anyway, moving on to the first thing.
Now, you're a musician.
I am. 2 years ago, I started to get into magic.
Right. Now, I know Mike forgot his computer, and while he was away, you were doing a couple of tricks on me, and it amazes me how the sleight of hand is, right in front of your face, and you still can't see it. Obviously, that's the hallmark of a good magician, but I was amazed. I don't want to give the game away, obviously, but it was fascinating to me.
Hmm.
Maybe when we're finished here, you can do a couple on mic.
Sure. Yeah. It's one of those art forms where we put a lot of time in so that you don't see what we're doing.
Right. Hmm. And how long do you have to practice and practice and practice?
I practice every day.
You do?
Yes. Right. Yeah, several hours a day. And you just would never become good at it if you didn't.
Right.
What made you want to get into magic?
I was actually went to Scotland for a wedding. And...
Where's that?
Actually, I'd have to back up a little bit and say that at first my wife had bought me a book on card magic, and I had gotten sick after we came back from Italy. And that book had sat there for a couple of years, but when I got sick, when we came home, I picked it up and started looking at it.
Right.
And I started doing card tricks. But I think it was really when I went to Scotland in the UK that I fell in love with street performing.
Right.
As an art form.
We did a show a while ago, and I was with Patricia Charbonneau, and I was talking about busking in Scotland. It was Neil Young, was a YouTube video of Neil Young busking in Glasgow the day of his concert that night, and nobody knew, very few people knew who he was sitting in the street, and Mike didn't know what
busking means.
Familiar with the phrase busking. But busking is major in Europe, isn't it?
It really is, and unfortunately it's not here in the US, but it's an art form that's very well respected in the UK and in Europe in general.
Mm-hmm.
And there are performers that dedicate their career to busking.
Yes.
And that's wonderful to see.
Yeah. Now, do you perform?
Yes.
And perform regularly as...
I do, yeah. I just performed this past Saturday, and I have a gig coming this Saturday.
Right, okay. And how long does that last? Is it like an hour or so? Or?
It depends. If it's a party, it's usually about an hour. But if it's strolling magic, then maybe longer. I have a regular gig at the Chicken Run Restaurant in Wyndham. And I'll perform there most Saturday nights when I'm not performing somewhere else.
Now, you said... A roaming?
Strolling, roaming.
Is that just walking about the people?
Yes, approach people while they're eating their dinner, while they're waiting for their meal, or if they're finished with their meal and they're waiting for the check.
Yeah, I've seen that before. That's excellent. So I think it intrigues people and it keeps people entertained and,
And the owners like it because if they're waiting for their food comes quicker.
Yeah. Right.
And if they're finished with their food, they tend to stay longer.
Yeah.
And
get another drink, get a dessert.
Exactly. And it just enhances their experience overall.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win.
Excellent. You say your father's from Scotland?
Yes.
Whereabouts in Scotland?
Shots.
Shots? Shots is just outside of Glasgow.
Correct.
It's on the periphery of Glasgow. It's almost like if you imagine, say, New York City, and it's kind of like Westchester, a kind of borough of greater Glasgow. Did he move here, or is he?
He did. He came here at age 17.
Right.
He was the youngest of 13, and he was the only one that came to America.
And did he maintain his accent?
Only when he was mad. Not nearly as strong as your accent.
Right.
Pretty well assimilated, except if he was angry, you'd hear it.
Right. Well, I think, I left Scotland. I came here, about 8 years ago. So I was in my mid to late 30s. So by that time, my accent's obviously
established.
But if you're 17, then, you're young and you're more susceptible to change, aren't you?
So, absolutely. So, your brain is still developing.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
Now, do you know any British magicians?
I know a few.
Yeah?
In fact, I just recently met Paul Daniels.
Ah, the old guy, Paul Daniels.
Yeah,
and his wife, Debbie.
Yeah, he's spry, though, I'll tell you. I don't know how old he is, but I just saw him. He came to the U.S. and he was the leading act for a convention called Magi Fest. It was about 1,000 magicians.
Right.
And he ran the whole program.
Right. And, Paul Daniels.
He's a famous television magician.
In Scotland, Britain, yeah.
Right.
Paul Daniels is, he's established, he's been doing it for decades, One of my favourite of all times, a comedian magician was Tommy Cooper.
Tommy Cooper, yes.
Tommy Cooper was, he kind of cornered the comedian magician.
Absolutely.
Genre, and he was fantastic. Unfortunately, the saddest and one of the most memorable things about Tommy Cooper was he actually died of a heart attack live on stage, primetime British television, which was, and people in the crowd thought it was part of the act, and he collapsed in a heart attack, and then they pulled the curtain down and they went to adverts, and they announced he died. One of my favorites of all time.
He started a whole movement in magic. Maybe, I guess you could debate whether he was the first, but he was certainly one of the first, of this concept of the magician in trouble, where every magic trick he's trying to do goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, it turns out right.
Yeah.
And that is comedy in that. And then he had these one-liners that he would use that were unique to him and that he had, I guess, been using.
It'd be like egg cup egg. Oh.
Yeah, I've seen some of his work.
Yeah, it's great. Okay, the first song we have, Sean, is "Boom Boom" by John Lee Hooker. What made you choose that song?
Well, I'm a big fan of the blues.
Uh huh.
And John Lee Hooker is somebody I actually had the opportunity to see live.
Right.
And I really was always so impressed with him as a musician. And that particular song, I just happen to love that song. And it's, I don't know if you're familiar with the words, but...
It's one of those songs I've heard, but it's kind of subliminal. I couldn't, if you sat down and said to me, give me a line from Boom Boom, I'd be like, no, I can't, I'll be honest with you, but... It's a great song, and he's obviously a well-known and respected artist, So,
I for the blues, for me, it's sort of when I'm want to mellow out a little bit and just relax. The blues are a perfect fit for me.
Yeah,
I don't want to give away the other artists that you've picked, but one of the things about him is nobody really knew where he was. John Lee Hooker was what age he was when he died. And he was also the son of a sharecropper back in the day when black men would be given part of a space to farm and raise crops, but they'd never really owned the space. And he was part of that, and he came from that era, and I think it's indicative, the fact that nobody really knew what age he was, it's indicative of the fact that of it was coming out of that era of slaves, and nobody really took any interest in the welfare of black people in America. And I think that comes through in the music as well. You know, the blues kind of signifies, you know, the troubles that the people are, the hardship that people are enduring at that time. And I think that comes through in his music. And he was one of the guests we had a while ago was Reggie Wilcox, and he played Boogie Boogie on the piano. One of the things, and I'm sure you know this, John Lee Hooker is known for is developing Boogie Woogie on the guitar. And this music is, so he's a forerunner for that, you know, using his guitar as an instrument, a multi instrument as opposed to just a sheer guitar. And the music is that came from that is fantastic.
And you listen to a lot of modern rock, you know, or not so modern, classic rock at this point.
Yeah.
Like the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin. A lot of that is based on the blues.
Yeah. So shall we hear the song?
Let's listen to it.
Yeah, this is Boom Boom by John Lee.
Boom, 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 boom. I'm gonna shoot you right down, right off of your feet. Take you home with me, put you in my house. Boom, 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 boom. I love to see you strut up and down the floor. When you're talking to me, that baby talk, I like it like that. Ho, 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 ho. She talk like that, she knocked me out, right off of my feet. Ho, 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 ho.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra. Today we have with us in the studio Sean Doolan from Wyndham, New York, and he's kindly joined us in the show, and it's great to have you here, Sean.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, your next item is a metal bucket.
Well, there's a magic trick I'm working on that involves coins and a metal bucket, and it's quite loud. Right. So if the mood is right, I'll maybe get a little rise out of my wife by dropping the coins into the bucket.
Right.
If I want to get her going a little bit and wind her up a little bit.
No, you can't divulge the trick.
Not the method, but the trick is the audience sees one coin, and that coin multiplies again and again and again and again and again. Before you know it, there's 50 coins in the bucket, and they only saw one at a time.
Right.
And they saw an empty bucket to begin with.
Right.
Penn and Teller do this trick on stage in Vegas.
Right.
It's much more sophisticated, but the method is, the concept is similar. I mean, the method might be different.
Right. Mm. Okay. Well, that's...
And I mean, not divulging the secrets, that's a big deal. Have you taken an oath as a professional magician?
Yes, to join the various professional societies of magicians. The Society of American Magicians and the International Brotherhood of Magicians, we do take an oath.
Yeah.
Not to divulge the secret to non-magicians.
Yeah. So, like an oath like the Masonics?
Well, I guess maybe akin to the Mafia oath we talked about.
Oh, that's a little more serious.
You know, if you've done something wrong in the Mafia, you got maybe a kiss on the lips.
Yeah.
But well, they make it disappear in a different way.
Right. Well, that was funny.
Well, moving on to the next song?
Absolutely, yeah.
Another song you'd like to take, Sean, is AC/DC's Back in Black. And you like AC/DC in general. You've been listening to them since you were a kid. Do you remember when you first got into the group?
I do, quite well.
Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was in seventh grade, and I was at a friend's house. Actually, my best friend at the time, he lived right next to me. We were in all these attached row houses. And he had that album. Wait, not that album. He had the Bat Out of Hell album, which is not by AC/DC, by Meatloaf. And then he had an AC/DC album there. And actually, I don't remember which one it was. I don't think it was Back in Black at the time. But it was one of the earlier albums.
And this was vinyl?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Nice. Yeah. The gray hair will prove that. Yeah. And that's when I first... That was really the first band that I truly fell in love with, was AC/DC.
Right.
Literally, this album, the Back in Black album, I listened to it literally every single morning before school.
Right.
That's what I did. I would put it on. It would drive my father insane.
No,
the thumping, you know, is what he would call it. It was just, to him, it was just thumping noise.
Right.
That was pointless.
do you still listen to, you know, rock music?
Absolutely. Yeah, I still listen to AC/DC. I saw them a few years ago.
Yeah.
In Madison Square Garden. They were amazing.
Yeah.
Remarkable voice of the lead singers. I think really unique. They have a sound that's all their own. The raspy vocals.
That's what I love about them. You hear an AC/DC song 30 years ago or today, and you know it's AC/DC.
Yeah.
Their signature is on their music. And there's nothing, there's no frills about it. It's just raw rock and roll. And that's the way they...
And they were characters, weren't they? Mad Angus Young,
yeah.
You know, dressed as a schoolboy, yeah. And, bouncing, you know, bouncing about like a madman. But, you know, you compare it to nowadays, and you think to yourself, these guys were quite tame. But, you know, it's... But these guys were fantastic. And whether you liked or appreciated that type of music or not, you can still appreciate the musicianship and the entertainment value, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're a lot of fun to see live. And they sound great live, as they do on vinyl, as you say.
Yeah.
I was just telling Mike a while ago, I got a record player for my Christmas. And I was actually out, and I was in Beacon at the weekend, and I bought about 5-6. It was one of those, I'm into the record shop, and I intended to buy one album, and ended up leaving with 7.
Nice.
You know? And I bought, amongst others, I bought the Kinks. What was the other one I bought? It escapes me who I bought, but I'm looking forward to listening to them anyway, you know? And... But it's coming back in a big way, albums, you know.
Yeah, vinyl.
Yeah.
People, there's kind of this audiophile movement, and vinyl is almost an unrivaled media for the pure recording of the original sound, and better than digital and stuff, so people are getting back into it.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And when you hear that just before it starts, you hear that crackling. It's almost like a bonfire or a campfire, you know, and there's that anticipation of that. then the song comes in, you know.
Yeah.
I'd say the Achilles heel of the vinyl is that it jumps easy.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And that could be problematic if you're maybe walking by and you maybe unsettle it and it jumps, or you damage the album and you kind of, you know, you scratch it.
Then to go from song to song is a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Digitally.
Yeah. But you can now, with the new record players, download the album onto removable disc and then download it onto your computer, which is great, you know.
Sure.
That was Back in Black by AC/DC. Great choice, Sean.
Thank you.
One of the other items that you wanted to take with you on your getaway to the secluded mountains is a pad to write notes, to write a script for a show. You want to elaborate on that?
Yes, it's very important to not only know the technical moves of a magic trick, but the actual patter, the words that you use, are critically important. Every word that a magician uses is very well thought out and scripted.
Now, is it important to you that you develop a comedic act to go with your comedy, with your magic, or is it more just a script to describe what you're doing?
I think there's a lot of comedy in the magic itself.
Right.
It just naturally flows from the magic, like what we did earlier.
Yeah.
We laughed about that.
Yeah, for the benefit of the listener, you made me look foolish with a card trick.
Well, that's not the goal. The goal is for you to be amused and have fun.
Oh, no. It was a spontaneous out laugh thing, you know.
Right. But that's what you're shooting for.
Would you say then that the magic takes care of the laughs and you just maybe add little bits to kind of augment that?
Yeah, I think it's important to me to not try to be a comedian.
Right.
Because that's not what I am. I'm a magician. So, but having said that, I do put bits and pieces in a routine to try to draw a laugh.
Right.
Now and then.
Yeah.
But my first goal is that the magic effect work the way it's supposed to work. And if it does, there'll be humor built into that generally.
Yeah. And it's important, I would say, that you don't overdo the comedy element because you don't want to deflect from essentially what is the most important thing, which is the magic, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, not everybody can be a Tommy Cooper,
for
example. And,
you
know, he was one of a kind. And to try to mimic that would be foolish.
Yeah.
So there is, having said that, there is humor in my magic.
Yeah.
And there's some one-liners or lines that I've written. But it's not the focus of what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah. Could, without giving anything away, could you give us a brief example of how the words come into the magic? Is there a particular part of a trick where you inserted a phrase that you can tell us about that was really critical and important? An important part. I'm just having trouble thinking in my own mind of examples of where I've seen tricks, and it was like, oh, it was so perfect that he said that in that particular spot.
Well, there's a concept in magic called misdirection, and I think that's not properly named. I really think it's more attention direction. The effect that I did for you earlier, Andy, I was directing your attention in one particular place.
Yes.
And something else was going on that you were not entirely aware of. So that's, I was not so much misdirecting you, but really I was directing your attention in a particular place. So it's not like you say, oh, look over there, and while they look over there, you're doing something over here.
Mm.
It's more that you're directing their attention to what's obviously right in front of them and makes sense for them to look at while you're doing it, and then you're obviously working on something else.
I see. Interesting.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it's better illustrated in an actual...
And obviously it's better illustrated by actually physically doing it. But, I understand what you're saying.
And then once the trick is done, you'll realize, well, he must have done something. I don't know what it was, but he did something that...
Yeah.
Directed my attention.
What did you do?
To YouTube.
Now, do you use your wife to test out your magic tricks and stuff like that?
I do. Yes, my wife and my son. In fact, there's a famous magician named Di Vernon. He's probably contributed more to sleight of hand than any other magician. And Di Vernon, if they wanted to get him and his wife wanted to get the children to go to bed, the wife would say, your dad's going to do another trick for you. And they would run to bed. So it hasn't reached that point in my home.
And but is your son armed with a batch of tricks that he can go in and woo the girls with in school?
He's an artist and not a magician. He appreciates it, but he doesn't perform it.
Right.
He's 25 now, so he's all grown. In fact, Mike Porter, you know my son.
Yeah, absolutely. He was in the first class that I ever taught, AP U.S. History, first period, first day, first minute.
Now, for the benefit of the listeners, I have done some teaching in the past, and I've also taught in Wyndham High School. Have I ever taught Sean's son?
No. I think he was a little before your time, before he got into education.
Right.
And but great,
and was
great
he,
guy, great
you know,
kid.
Not to put you on the spot, Mike, but was he a... a nice student, or was he a problematic student?
Oh, outstanding, and a great sense of humor, and intellectual. He was a great kid in a great group. It was probably the best start I could have ever had as a teacher. And in particular, one of the great memories I have of your son, Zhenya, he's born in Russia, and we used to joke, especially talking about the Cold War, that maybe he was a Russian spy, and we used to joke with each other. I think he used to watch Seinfeld. Did you guys watch Seinfeld? And Jerry would be like, "Hello, Newman," and it would be like, "Hello, Jerry." I'd be like, "Hello, Zhenya," and he would be like, "Mr. Porter." And it was just kind of like this pretend tension in the room. And yeah, his junior year and his senior year, and I always really appreciated that and had a great time. Enjoyed watching him play basketball. So just tell us a little about Zhenya, if you can.
He's 25 now. He's graduated college. But we met Zhenya when he was 11 years old. He was, as you said, we adopted him. He was here in the U.S. With a group that was that had children with him that were available for adoption, and we met him just fortuitously. We weren't in the process of trying to adopt a child at that point in our lives. We were having some difficulty having a child, but we weren't in the process of adopting either. But we met him just by chance, and then he stayed with us for 3 weeks here in the Catskills, which was quite an experience for him. He didn't speak, and us, he didn't speak English, we didn't speak Russian, and here we are literally, you know, in a cabin in the woods,
yeah,
in the Catskill Mountains, trying to sort this out. But we had a wonderful time because of things like PlayStation and chess, and as you know, he played a lot of chess, so I don't know if he played him, but he was very good, and sports, and we connected during those 3 weeks, and then unfortunately he had to go back to Russia. But we started the process to adopt him, and by Christmas that year, he was back here in the U.S. in our home as our child.
So. Wow.
And WAJ was a wonderful place for him to grow up and go to school in WAJ.
Fantastic. Yeah. My brother, my older brother, he fostered three kids, three sisters, three young girls. And subsequently, my sister and her husband, they are in the process of adopting the youngest of the three girls. And it's the first time that the social workers have experienced one member of a family fostering three kids and then another member of the family adopting.
That's unique.
You know? And... you know, I'm proud of them, you know, for doing that. You know, whenever we can, that's one of the reasons why I'm working in the environment, I'm working in not-for-profit, because fundamentally what I want to do is help people. And, you know, I think if we can all help people, no matter in what way, give people better lives, then let's do it. You know, it's what we should be on this planet for, to help each other. You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Whether that be teaching, adopting kids, giving them a better home, or helping people, you know, find a direction that they need to go in or whatever. You know, it's great stuff. Well, so, well done.
Oh, thank you. It's been a wonderful experience.
Excellent.
Sean, when you are practicing magic, you like to listen to classical music. Tell us about that.
If I'm practicing somewhere where I want to shut out all other background noise, I'll either play New Age music or classical music. Something, if it's classical, something a little more mellow. And this way, it helps to... It is somewhat stimulating, relaxing, and at the same time, it kind of blocks everything else out.
I like to listen to classical music when I drive, especially. I tend to be a little tightly wound and get stressed out in heavy traffic, and classical music helps me to mellow. And I hear that you know, they always promote it with advertisements on the radio saying that it promotes intellectual development, particularly in the young, and that's excellent. Also, it's a great background noise in that there aren't any lyrics. There's nothing that you can get distracted by. It's just this soothing melody that plays.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, I can study, I can read generally listening to classical music. I can't do anything intellectual if it's pop or rock or anything else, because I just think about the lyrics and I get distracted.
I'm just like you. I'm not one of these people that can work with music in the background if it has lyrics and that sort of thing.
I've always been intrigued by that, you know, maybe in a, you know, in a university library or something. You're in, you know, a place of study, and I see young students with headphones on listening to thumping, raucous style music that I think to myself, I couldn't even hear myself think, never mind study.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, that's just me, and I find that interesting.
Sean, during a break you were saying that they've done studies and found that classical music helps folks with dementia, the elderly. Tell us a little about that.
There's a movie called, I think it's called Alive Inside, and it's a beautiful movie about how they use music to reach the person inside who has dementia. A lot of these people didn't know who they were or where they were. But as soon as that earbud was placed in, the music was turned on, they literally would come alive, and they would actually start trying to dance and move. Mm. And in some cases, they actually were able to sing the words of the songs.
Wow.
They would pick songs from their time period and music from their time period, and they literally came alive for that brief moment. It was beautiful to see, and it's something that there's a movement now to introduce music to the elderly with dementia across this country.
Sean, we've talked about, you know, classical music and helping the elderly with dementia. Earlier we talked about how you are currently an advocate for the elderly in long-term facilities such as nursing homes and assisted living. I think that's a really cool connection, and I was wondering what inspired you to get into that area of the law.
I think this is an hour show if we had about another 2 hours. It's a very long story, but I'll give you the short version. The short version is I had a great uncle who I really didn't know or have any contact with in a nursing home in the Bronx.
Was he in the mafia?
He's on the Italian side, but no. He's actually a very eccentric doctor, and my mother kept in touch with him. I had didn't know him at all, really. My Uncle Danny, and he had fallen at home and fractured his hip, and he ended up in a nursing home in the Bronx, and my mother insisted that I go see him. And when I went to see him is when I discovered he was being horribly neglected and abused in this nursing home. And I couldn't find a lawyer. I was a prosecutor in the Bronx, so I couldn't really do anything legally for him. I tried to find a lawyer to advocate for him, but they weren't interested because there was no real money to be made. It's not a knock against lawyers. It's the reality of what we do. You have to be able to make a living. And there was no advocacy group, not for profit, that would do it. That was the beginning. I was there at the beginning when nursing home litigation really took off in New York. And nationwide, it started a little bit earlier, but in New York, that was the beginning of it. And right around 1999 is when there was really, really almost nobody doing it in the state of New York with any kind of consistency. And that's when it began.
Especially with an increasing elderly population in the United States, not only is the population huge, but these folks are living a long time, decades. I think this is an up-and-coming major issue, you know, how we care for the elderly.
Yeah, as you say, people, you know, the more and more we have medical breakthroughs, such as stem cell and, you know, cancer treatments that prolong people's lives, then we are going to see this as being an increasingly problematic issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
But thanks for your service there, Sean. The classical piece that we have is a Serenade for Winds by Mozart. That was Serenade for Winds by Mozart. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC ACRA, that's 90.7 FM. Today in the studio we have Sean Doolin. Sean, thanks again for being here. And we're coming down to the end. We just have a couple more things to talk about and a song. Sean, you'd like to bring books and magazines on magic. Are there any books and magazines in particular?
Well, I guess it comes at no surprise at this point that it would be a book on card magic and a magazine on magic.
This book is The Royal Road to Card Magic.
That's right. It's really a classic in card magic.
Now, can I ask, does that book give you instructions on how to do tricks?
It does. A lot of card magic is based on gambling moves that gamblers would use to cheat people.
Right. Hmm.
That's where it all originated.
Right.
And a lot of the moves in this book are based on that. There was an earlier book which was written for gamblers, and a lot of that material is in this book, The Royal Road to Card Magic, but this is a classic.
So how easy is it to learn a trick?
In the beginning, it was very hard. I mean, I couldn't read these books and really understand what I was reading. It's not well illustrated, as you can see. Mm. And the descriptions are very detailed, and without a video to go with it, it was very confusing.
Have to conceptualize the steps.
Yeah, it took me a long time to really understand.
And how would you consider yourself to be, and what level of magician would you consider yourself to be? Without being too hard on yourself.
Yeah, I'm a beginner.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't just do cards, but...
But you obviously feel confident enough to do... Gigs and terms of, you know, you mentioned earlier about doing a local restaurant and stuff like that. So you obviously feel confident enough to do that.
Absolutely. To the lay public, some of what I do might not seem that way. They wouldn't necessarily think of me as a beginner. But when I think of people like Paul Daniels and Juan Tamarez and some of the great magicians, and you realize that it took them, you know, decades,
right,
to master. Sometimes just one move in particular.
Right. Mm.
You realize that, in comparison to sleight of hand artists that have been, I think it's akin to the music, you know, like playing the guitar.
Right.
Maybe after a couple of years of very intense work and working with some really talented teachers, you might be able to play a few tunes fairly well that people would enjoy. Mm.
Right.
But you wouldn't consider yourself
a master guitarist,
right,
or whatever.
Right, yeah. Right. You realize that would take, you know, decades.
I think, you know, from a purely entertainment point of view, I think if you can go into a restaurant or a bar or perform, as long as people are entertained, that's all that matters, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's what matters. And being a traveler helps, because I'm comfortable getting in front of a group of people I don't know and performing.
So great.
If they have a good time.
Well, I'm sure those books and that magazine will keep you entertained for a long time. And if it doesn't...
And a lot of other folks.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And if it doesn't, Van Gogh can soothe you to sleep.
Well, I didn't realize it was that I wasn't going to get out of this cabin, so...
As you drift slowly into madness, you can take inspiration from Van Gogh.
That's right.
Now, we're coming to the end, but we still have one song to hear, and that is Sonny Boy Williamson, Your Funeral and My Trial. What is it about Sonny Boy Williamson you wanted to bring to the camera?
Well, he's another blues musician, he's big on the harp, playing the harp. I love the harp.
You mean the mouth organ?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's more upbeat than a John Lee Hooker, and I just very much enjoyed listening to Sonny Boy Williamson back, you know, 30 years ago when I first discovered him, and I still do.
I was reading a bit on, you know, he, like John Lee Hooker, his father owned a sharecrop, and you know, he was born on a plantation, And on his tombstone, the date of birth is wrong, and they don't know what age he was. And I think, you know, going back to what I was saying at the beginning, you know, about the at that time, at the turn of the 20th century, when, you know, slaves were still part of society in America, you know, I think, you know, Sonny Boy Williamson is of that period where, you know, black men or black people were looked down upon. And I think that's quite, the music that came out of that period illustrates the trials and the tribulations that they actually went through, and
sure.
It kind of illustrates, well, the name, even the name of the genre of music, the blues, you know, illustrates the pain and the hurt and the hardship that they went through. But one interesting fact about Sonny Boy Williamson, he actually, there is talk that he stole the name. There was a man who took the name Sonny Boy Williamson before him, and there was it was contested, the name was contested, and to settle it, as he became more and more prominent, he actually changed the name to kind of illustrate that, you know, in the differences of the two men, he took the name Sonny Boy Williamson too.
Oh.
And there is talk that he deliberately suggested that he was born earlier than what he was, in an attempt to suggest that his name Sonny Boy Williamson was created before the actual Sonny Boy Williamson.
Mm.
But so an interesting little tidbit there, you know.
That is interesting.
But you mentioned there about the harp, you know, the mouth organ, and you know, I was reading a part that, you know, he entertained audiences with novelties such as inserting one end of the harmonica into his mouth and playing with no hands. And it was kind of like, I was thinking about, you know, at that time, it was like the Jimi Hendrix of his time for the mouth organ, you know. And he's one of these guys, when, you know, you listen to people with mouth organs, you know, there's no better master of the mouth organ than Sonny Boy Williamson.
Explain yourself to me, because, you know, we're man and wife trying to start a family. I'm begging you, baby, cut out the altar wall, Jai. Woman, if you can't treat me no better, it's going to be your fuel in my tribe. When I and you first got together, it was on one Friday night. We spent only two lovely hours together, and you told it was all right. I'm begging you, baby, please cut out the old wall, John. You know, if you can't treat me no better, it just got to be your fuel and my tribe. She can love to heal the sick, and she can love to raise the dead. You might think I'm joking, but you better believe every word I said. I'm begging you, baby, cut out the off-the-wall giant. Woman, if you can't treat me no better, gone to be your fuel in my tribe.
Thank you.
Sean, thank you very much for coming.
We just have one last question for you. How do you take your coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
If you did drink coffee.
I drank it cold once by accident. But I literally don't drink coffee.
Well, that's why you had a bad experience. I think if you some cream and sugar.
I drank it thinking it was something else. It was in the refrigerator, and I've never had it since. That's true.
Well, he's a man of honesty. He doesn't drink coffee. Mm. Well, Sean, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Sean Doolin, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks.